Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to Sun Sports Scottish Football Podcast, sponsored by William Hill. I'm Derek McGregor. I'm joined by David Frail and Gareth Law. Gentlemen, I was at Celtic yesterday, witnessed them creating history. A 27th domestic game from the start of a season unbeaten. Just how good an achievement is that, David?
I think the fact that it hasn't been done ever. You know, it's 50 years since Lisbon Lions did 26. I think it just that sums it all up. You know, to even be spoken about in the same breath as that team, and a team that really made history for Celtic, I think is a fantastic achievement for Brendan Rodgers and his players. And the consistency, you know, if you'd have said that the season started all the way back July, August, to still be going into February now, pretty much undefeated in domestic competition, is staggering, really. And I think it just sums up the work that Brendan Rodgers has done, the terrific work he's done, because let's face it, it was pretty much the same team as last year, barring a couple of additions. And I think he's getting the best out of players, and I think in terms of how relentless and how much danger Celtic posed to opposition, it's quite a remarkable turnaround.
Gareth, in 1966-67, Jock Stein's famous, unforgettable side, clearly the competition on the home front was far greater, far stronger than it is now, but nevertheless, should that detract from what Brendan Rodgers' squad has managed this season?
I don't think so. I think you've still got to beat what's put in front of you. Pretty much echo everything David's just said there. The relentlessness, the way he's got them playing, the style of play, you just can't argue with a lot that he's done this season. And I know we talk about it every week, but you know, the more you watch the team, the more now I think they can go through the season unbeaten.
Really?
Yeah, I just think, I mean, you look at it yesterday, they were missing Lee Griffiths, Moussa Dembele, Stuart Armstrong pulled out. You know, there was a last minute change of plan with Stuart Armstrong having to pull out, and yet they can still go and do that. And I just think that the confidence in that dressing room now, even teams playing against Celtic now, part of you that wonders that they're not beaten before they get on the park, but you know, the way Celtic are playing, it's very, very tough to play against them. And I wasn't sure earlier on, because I remember doing a column with John Hartson. He'd said that, you know, there's always one, usually in a season, where you can maybe slip up. I wonder now if there will be one this season.
I must admit, the one of the games that I've seen of Celtic this season, guys, I mean, the one thing that really does impress me, apart from the obvious ability or the quality of some of the goals, I mean, the attitude of the team, even when they've been playing poorly. And there's been a number of games, home games this season, where they've laboured a bit, but what doesn't change is their attitude and their desire to still get that result. There's no, as you say, Gareth, there's no easing up.
I also think, I mean, you look at it yesterday, Kieran Tierney, he's come back into the side after his injury, and you look at him yesterday and it's like he's never been away. You know, it's almost like they've got a new signing back in there. You know, it's the January window, but he was always on the books, but he's fit again and playing. I mean, there was assists for him yesterday, really, really top performance from him. All those things pointed them for me that they can go the season unbeaten. The one area I suppose you can look at is the goalkeeping issue right now, whether Craig Gordon stays or whether he goes, and you know, whether he stays or whether he goes, either way it could cause harmony, disharmony, you know, in terms of whether they then have to bring somebody in or if they keep Gordon and maybe Gordon's unhappy to stay. That's the only grey area, but I still think there's enough in the rest of that squad. They can keep attacking. The best form of defence is attack for Celtic as well at times, and so the goalkeeper in a domestic game, you can argue, I don't think he's as maybe vital as in the Champions League.
I mean, with their 27-game run, David, they've achieved something that not even the Lisbon Lions could. But, I mean, can they be lauded as legends just now? Or is it still way too early for that kind of talk?
I think, I mean, regardless of what they're in the history books. So, you know, in 50 years' time, people will look back and look at the team that broke that record, etc. I think, you know, to me, the most impressive thing is what Brendan Rodgers has done with players who people had written off.
Mm.
And the difference in Celtic in terms of, we spoke about the attitude and the relentless nature of them. You know, I looked at the Celtic game yesterday and they're 3-0 up, still hunting people down, still chasing people, still putting tackles in. looking like a team who wanted to score 4, 5, 6 goals. Now, you look back to the Rangers Scottish Cup semi-final, which is always a game I refer to, because I think for me that was the low point of Ronnie Dyler's reign, in the sense that that was a broken team. That was a team that the supporters had lost faith in, that the supporters had lost trust in, and a team that looked absolutely shattered.
They lost faith in themselves, haven't they?
Exactly. You know, they didn't look fit, they didn't look structured, they didn't look as if they really had an idea of where they were going as a club, as a team. That day, they just looked so disjointed. And I think Brendan Rodgers' team are the exact opposite. Everybody knows their job, everybody knows where they should be. You've got, you know, he's brought Dedrick Boyata from nowhere, yep. Absolutely nowhere.
Dramatic.
Who's now keeping Alex Fyodchenko out of the team. You've got Christian Gamboa yesterday putting his best performance. Patrick Roberts playing through the middle as a striker. He's 5'0". Absolutely tormented the Hearts defence. You've got Scott Brown, the last couple of games, has played further forward, driving the team on. Near Beaton looks as if the arrival of Ebuwe has given him a kick up the backside, because he looks like a different player now as well. He just seems to be able to get the absolute maximum out of these guys. And when you see where Celtic have come from, we're only talking last April, that Scottish Cup semi-final. It's incredible.
That's what I particularly admire, Gareth, and a good manager. It's clearly, recruitment's always huge for any manager, but a good manager should also be able to coach players, say, inherits, make them better. And as David rightly points out, you've got Boyata, you've got Armstrong, you've got Forrest, and I must admit, what I particularly liked yesterday as well was the involvement of academy players. There was a fair sprinkling of academy players. You know, Henderson and Aitchison comes on. Every time that kid comes on, he has an effect in a game, some kind of a way. But as I say, a proper good manager coaches those he's already got, makes them better, as well as bringing in good ones.
I'm sure you'll agree, when we deal with him, the thing that struck me is the clarity he speaks with. You know, he'll give us an argument, but he'll justify it and back it up in clear, decisive terms. And you can only presume that he's the same in the dressing room, and everybody knows exactly what they're to do, where they're to be. Extend that even to the boardroom when he's looking for transfer targets. You know, you can imagine him giving a very good argument as to why he wants a certain player in and backing it up completely. So I think clarity for him is key as well. He obviously knows his stuff on top of that as well, but you know, knowing his stuff is one thing, getting the message across is another. As maybe, you know, you could look at Ian Cathro possibly, you know,
we'll
come to that later. But I think that is key with Brendan Rodgers. He can get his message across to the point that players know exactly what they have to do.
I mean, you've already stated, Gareth, your conviction now that Celtic are going to go unbeaten. You feel pretty sure there's every chance now. David, would you concur with that? Would you agree with that?
I'm not so sure for one reason. I think if Celtic continue to play their strongest team for the rest of the season, then yeah, they could easily do it. I think though, towards the end of the season, I think Brendan Rodgers is going to give some guys a rest. I think that's just natural. Celtic start back in June the 20th. Scotland could play in June the 10th. Or Scotland do play in June the 10th. Scottish Cup final's late May. At this rate, Celtic are going to have the league wrapped up in March. So I don't think he's going to flog these guys. I don't think Scott Brown, Scott Sinclair, Dembele. Brendan Rodgers is now, Scottish Cup's there, right? The Scottish Cup would be a bonus for Celtic. Brendan Rodgers' thought now is the Champions League qualifiers. That's all he's thinking about. Everything he's doing is geared towards that. Now, we saw Neil Lennon do it, gave guys pretty much a rest. I think Brendan Rodgers will do the same. I don't think he'll continue to keep playing his strongest team. I think there was 5 academy players yesterday involved in total. Callum McGregor, James Forrest, Henderson, Tierney and Jack Aitchison. I think you'll see more and more come into the team towards the end of the season. I think that's what will make Celtic maybe lose a game here and there, because I don't think there's any point in playing their strongest team throughout the whole season. Records are great, and it would be to be invincible and be undefeated for the whole season, great, but what's more important, the Champions League. And that's it's all geared towards Champions League.
I mean, yep.
You could argue yesterday though that wasn't the strongest team. You know, and you know, they're missing all those players as we talked about, you know, Stuart Armstrong up there, Rodgers, Dembele, Griffiths. Yeah, they've still gone on and I do agree,
but I think there'll be even more. I think you'll see. I mean, remember Kenny Dalglish famously did it that season. Pretty much just played an under-23 team in the final game of the season. Henrik Larsson made his comeback. I genuinely can see that because, see, for all you want to be undefeated, what's better? Giving Scott Sinclair 2 weeks off to go and just rest Scott Brown, giving him a couple of weeks. So that to me, everything has to be geared towards Champions League qualifiers, because it's all that matters. And let's face it, it's ridiculous how short a break the players get. I mean, we're not talking it's back in July with your feet up, you're talking 20th of June. Celtic will start in, I think, the 11th of July this year.
We're discussing if Celtic will lose a game between now and end of the season. Contrastingly, we look at Hearts. Will Ian Cathro win another game between now and end of the season? I think there's a growing amount of Hearts fans now that are getting a little bit concerned about the big project, the alternative. this is the Gorgie Project Brave on its own.
What do you make of Cathro so far, Gareth? Do you, as a growing scepticism about how things are unfolding at Tynecastle?
Well, we spoke about him last week after the both Wraith games, actually. That was my first experience of dealing with him, and obviously the first game didn't go well. The second game, I would argue, didn't go well either, even though they went through. I was at both games. The thing that struck me about him, particularly in the second game, was there's lots of gestures, big arm movements, like he's directing the traffic during the game. There was a couple of times he shouted out onto the pitch. Now, I might have missed it, and I'll hold my hand up if I did miss it, but I never saw one player react to what he shouted or which way he was waving. Now, that's only a small thing, mm-hmm. but I question some of his January transfer signings. Leonard Sowa, that's three games I've seen now, two live and one on the TV, and I'm not convinced with the recruitment. He'd said before the winter break that the winter break was going to be when he was going to do his work, and that was going to be a chance to get his ideas across. He's still talking very upbeat about things, but so far performances on the pitch haven't backed that up, and I think he's got, he's had quite a big couple of weeks there, but arguably he's got a bigger couple of weeks coming up right now.
Of course, I am being a tad tongue in cheek in terms of wondering if they will win another game between now and end of the season.
I hope he does well, Derek.
I think they'll win at least one. but I mean, he's had eight games in charge, two wins, one of which, as you've just been discussing, against a struggling Wraith Rovers team in a Scottish Cup replay. And you also touch on the transfer policy. I find it a bewilderingly kind of random transfer policy. I mean, as we speak, in terms of deals that have been completed or are just about to be completed, you're talking two Greeks, one Northern Irishman, one Moroccan, one Slovenian, one German, two Frenchmen, and one Portuguese striker. We're now going to be judging these players as they come in, but is it too left field? Is it too many foreigners to bring in?
I don't think so much as foreigners.
With exception Aaron Hughes,
I just think it's too many players. I think I don't. If somebody said to me the other day about Hearts, has a club ever ripped a team up in midway through a season when they're doing really well and it's worked?
They were second.
This is the thing. I do have sympathy for Ian Cathro to an extent in that. It's a big job, it's his first job, so there was always going to be a settling in period. He was never going to just come in, I don't think, and hit the ground running. He's lost Callum Patterson to injury, he's now lost John Souter to long-term injury, two of these kind of brightest young hopes. He's lost other guys through no fault of his own, probably, I think African Nations has taken away Jim.
Yeah.
And he's also had to go and try and sign players, he's tried to get his ideas across, and he's had some difficult games, and It looks a bit too much for him, and he's desperately crying out for a settled team and a win, a big win.
And in his defence, all the issues you've just outlined, that would be challenging enough for a very experienced manager. He's a rookie as well, and this is the thing, and he's obviously having to deal with the media spotlight. He had a horror post-match interview at Kirkcaldy the other week that did nothing to dampen down the critics who think he doesn't have the personality. But in fairness to him, all of those issues, that's seriously challenging for him.
Exactly, and that's the thing. I mean, whenever we speak about Ian Cathro, there's always that element of his age, his sort of reputation, the fact that a lot of people put so much stock in how he's the genius and all that sort of stuff, and probably unfairly, because I don't think he's ever said that. But take all that aside, forget the fact that it's Ian Cathro, he's 30, and it's Ian Cathro and all the stuff that went on when he first got the job. It's a bad situation for Hearts. It's a difficult situation for Hearts. But, as Gareth said, it's not going to get any easier. You've got Rangers on Wednesday, mm-hmm. and you've got Hibs in the Scottish Cup at Tynecastle. And I don't care what anybody says, there is zero pressure on Hibs in that game. No pressure at all.
Yep.
The pressure is all in Hearts. And it doesn't matter if Ian Cathro's 60 or 30. He needs a big result somewhere along the line. And he needs it fast, because very quickly now people are saying, wait a minute here, what's going on? Hearts, as you said, were second when he took over. People might say it's a false position, but they're still second. The team was going quite well. Suddenly it's just been ripped apart, ripped to shreds. Guys are injured, they're losing games, they're out. They're replays against Wraith and everything. He needs a huge win somewhere along the line.
He does. It does, if only to make people believe, Gareth.
Yeah, and I think, we talk about his public persona and that interview at Kirkcaldy. I guess there's one of our columnists who'll be sitting there kind of nodding his head. Chris Boyd obviously would probably say he predicted this.
Told you so.
Told you so. The one thing that surprised me about that was, you know, Ian Cathro is this modern manager. You believed he was a guy who was prepared. You know, you can question his man management skills. You can question, you know, the way he talks in the dressing room and stuff like that. But you're almost like left under the belief that he was coming with, in inverted commas, the whole package. You know, in terms of preparation and qualifications and intelligence that way. And you would imagine media training would have been one. You know, you would imagine that was fairly straightforward, and you know that would be a key element of a modern manager wanting to cover all bases. And to me, I mean, the way he's putting his message across, certainly Kakodi, it didn't come across as though he knew how to handle the media in a crisis situation, which you could argue that was. You know, other than that, you know, other people who have dealt with him more have said that he's been quite warm and decent with the journalists, but I would have thought his public persona, he would have worked on that.
But it's like practicing penalty kicks, nothing prepares you for the real thing. And this is the thing, Ian Cathro can read all these manuals and do all this and do all that. Nothing prepares you for having to go in and answer questions after you've drew away throwers.
Of course, the Sun Sport team is very fortunate that, you know, we've got Roger Hanna to inspire us. You know, he's a great presence.
Team talks.
Stirring rhetoric, you know, always inspirational.
Stirring what?
Inspirational rhetoric every day.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
But, I mean, you know, being serious, of course, I mean, it's the ability to inspire. You know, it's not necessarily about tactics boards and graphs and whatever. Yeah. You know, the words, you know, that's huge, and that question mark is still there.
Totally, and it'll continue going on, and the longer these, I mean, they're poor results, but, I mean, they got through against Wraith in the week, for example, and he seemed quite content with that, you know, and you could argue that they did the job, you know, they're in the next round, but I've yet to see anything that's really, you know, got me excited about this Ian Cathro team at the minute.
Put you on the spot, Gareth. Do you think they will beat Rangers?
No. No, I don't.
David?
No.
Do you both think Rangers will win?
Yeah.
I'm not so sure Rangers will win, but I don't think Hearts will beat Rangers.
I must admit, I'm thinking Rangers will win, and I think they'll win quite comfortable. I was very impressed with the Rangers at Motherwell on Saturday. Both teams down to 10 men. If we begin to look at the transfer window, Rangers are bringing in Jack Alnick for £250,000. I'll ask both of you, are you surprised at that amount of money for a backup keeper, given Rangers' current financial state?
If funds are not plentiful at Rangers right now, I would have thought there's more important areas of the pitch where that money should have been spent. I was stunned to hear they were paying a transfer fee for a goalkeeper who, judging by the way Mark Warburton has gone this season, will be on the bench for the next few months at the very least. You know, I would have thought they'd have been looking at whether putting that money towards getting Kenny Miller on another contract, or even bringing in another striker, or even addressing the defence. I would have thought the goalkeeper would have been a fair way down that priority list.
It's an intriguing one, David, because I'm pretty sure that's a bigger outlay than actually West Fotheringham cost. And I think West Fotheringham, by and large, has had a good season. But do you begin to wonder if Alnick will indefinitely be a backup keeper?
Yeah, I mean, I was quite... I mean, when this all broke, I think, kind of on Friday, I was very cynical in the sense that I think this can only be a long-term replacement or a short-term replacement for West Fotheringham, in the sense that I think... You know, you don't. For me, Rangers don't sign a goalkeeper of that status, that age. He's a Portville captain, and spend a bit of money, as we're talking about, unless they have plans to play him now and again. And I don't think West Fotheringham is going to drop. Far from it. I wonder whether West Fotheringham, Rangers probably believe he might move on, whether it's the summer, and that Jack Alnwick is the long term replacement. I think Wes Wallingham's been a good signing for Rangers. I think of all the signings Mark Warburton's made, I think he's the guy who did well in the Championship, has made the step up very well too. Yep. And I think Wes Wodingham's star is on the rise. I think he's a good goalkeeper, and I think that he's got a move in him. I think he could easily go down and play an English Championship at a decent club, no problem at all. I think Wes Wodingham probably believes he can go even further, but I just don't think you sign a guy as a backup keeper for that money.
Of course, albeit League One with Port Vale, nevertheless, you know, he's number one. Mm-hmm. He's 23. What does he want to suddenly come up at this stage of his career to just disappear?
It has to be a long term move. I think it's long term planning. It's probably cute business in Rangers' part, because you're right. How can Rangers sell coming to be number two up here? I think there must be an idea that Wes Wodingham is probably going to move on. That's just me looking into it. I just don't think it makes sense otherwise.
Interesting. Aberdeen chaps, come to Parkhead on Wednesday night. I'll put you in the spot again. Do you see Aberdeen beating Celtic, David?
No.
Gareth?
After saying I think Celtic are going to go this season unbeaten.
I'm just testing you there, Gareth.
I know you win.
I was looking for the quickest U-turn ever there. Well done, Gareth. You passed the test. Well done. Well done. Just try to catch you out there.
Don't get me wrong. Aberdeen were good on Friday night. Really impressed. And you also wonder, you know, Johnny Hayes, Niall McGinn, they played... They were good on Friday, and you wonder if, I mean, you look at Johnny Hayes and the interest from Cardiff. I mean, could Aberdeen be potentially one or two of their star men down by that point?
But I mean, yeah, it's a very good point, Gareth. I mean, on the basis that they're not, and they come to Parkhead with their strongest team intact. I mean, once again with Aberdeen, I'm thinking they're coming to Glasgow and they're looking in good shape, and part of me is thinking they could get a result. But how many times have we been here before, or, you know, I think a number of us, myself included, thought they might have a chance in the League Cup final, the Betfred Cup final, and yet what happens? They fall flat on their faces. If there's no Dembele for Celtic, if there's no Armstrong, Aberdeen contrastingly up front are in good form, could they even get a draw here? Or are we...
I think they're capable. I think to me, Aberdeen are on a really good run now, and they look back to being a strong, organised, kind of established team. Easily one of the best in the Scottish League. But
yep.
Do you know why? I think because Derek McInnes has just went back to his strongest team. I generally know he had a lot of games and they started early on him, but I felt he tinkered far too much with his team at times, and Rooney was in the bench and McGinn was in the bench and Hayes had been injured, Madison was in and out. I think he's gone back to Jack, Shinny, McLean, Hayes, McGinn and Adam Rooney, and what a difference it makes.
Of course, theoretically, I mean, Aberdeen could be playing a Celtic team minus Craig Gordon. Celtic could be facing an Aberdeen side minus Johnny Hayes. They would be two massive players for either side to lose. Craig Gordon, Chelsea seem determined to bring in Craig Gordon here. What's your gut feeling? Away? Stay?
I think it all depends what Chelsea do. Obviously, we're talking here on Monday.
Yep.
We're a day or so to go before it shuts. My general feeling, and it's probably been since kind of Friday, Saturday, is that if Chelsea play ball in terms of an acceptable bid, then Craig Gordon will be away. I could be proved wrong as by the time people listen, but that was my feeling. I just think it's too good an opportunity for Craig to turn down at this stage of his career.
Gareth?
Yeah, I'd kind of echo those comments. I think, I mean, it's very easy to forget where he was when Celtic took him on. You know, where was his career going? Celtic gave him the chance. But then, you know, you remember where he was under Brendan Rodgers earlier in the season. He was on the bench. He's done phenomenally well to, first of all, get his career back on track, and then to dislodge Doris de Vries after Brendan Rodgers supposedly deemed him not good enough, you know, with the ball at his feet, certainly.
Do you agree with our columnist Chris Boyd, who yesterday made it clear that he owes Brendan Rodgers Celtic nothing? That he's fully entitled to go without any feeling of thinking about the club? Or
yeah, I mean, you can see that, you know, yes, as I said, that they gave him the platform, but I would, you know, you could argue that he's
repaid them with interest.
With interest. The one thing is, I mean, I think he's got the 6 months and a 1 year deal. One year option left
in Celtic's favour.
In Celtic's favour. So if Celtic did turn down another approach, he was happy to sign that deal at the time. I know football doesn't work like...
Good point, Gareth.
Football doesn't work like business, does it? But, you know, Celtic could be quite within their rights to say no, you're not going anywhere. Then they've got an unhappy player to deal with, potentially.
Yeah, I can imagine, you know, Craig Gordon, there's so many emotions at the moment. There has to be a huge attraction about Chelsea, even if the game time's going to be reduced. But there's so many other you know, elements of it that is in his thinking right now. It's a fascinating one. It really is a fascinating one. I personally think if Chelsea start to get to a certain figure, and if indeed they're talking 4 million at the moment,
that's the thing. His age is a decent money for a guy of that age as well. You can
without
argue.
A doubt.
So from a purely business point of view, you know, I think it would make sense to everybody involved. If a 4, 4.5, then Craig Gordon would want to go, no doubt. Celtic should be happy with 4, 4.5. I don't know if
for somebody who's on a free transfer.
Listen, Brendan Rodgers on Friday was saying, where am I going to get another keeper from? At short notice. And I can kind of see his point, but I would also refer him back to August when he signed a keeper.
Yeah.
Who, if he'd asked him in August who would be a first choice keeper come January, he'd have said Dodds DeVries, because Dodds DeVries wasn't signed to come and sit on a bench, he was signed to play.
Of course, he would have to bring in another keeper. I mean, you'd imagine Dodds DeVries go straight in,
but would they? Because Celtic are one of the
or
few
is Leo
teams,
Fazan worth, no,
well,
you know?
Logan Bailey still there. Celtic are one of the rare teams in football who have three senior keepers.
Good point,
too
David.
Many keepers.
I forgot about him.
You know, Logan Bailey's played for Belgium before. Logan Bailey was easily deemed good enough to be Celtic's backup keeper last
fair
year.
Point.
So I don't really see Celtic need by the keeper.
Plus, you could also look at it. You know, Dodds DeVries is there. As we've talked earlier, they've got such a lead in the league. They've won the League Cup. I mean, do they need to replace somebody of the calibre of Craig Gordon right now? You know, yes, they need to maybe get somebody in potentially for the Champions League. But I wrote a blog the other week about why they could sell Moussa Dembele now, because they don't need Moussa Dembele for the rest of this particular season. They would have time to bring in a replacement. And I think similarly with Craig Gordon, the lead and the cushion they built up in the league allows them time. They don't need him, in my opinion, and that's why they could bring the money in now while they've got the chance.
Gentlemen, we'll wrap the podcast up by discussing the bottom of the table. Hamilton Accies have two games. They've got Inverness Tuesday night, and they have Kilmarnock on Saturday. One winning since October. You know, I saw Martin Canning earlier on today, the Hamilton manager, and he is quite rightly referring to them as huge games. Is there a kind of irreversible trend here with Hamilton in terms of results? Or, I mean, do you see Inverness quickly overtaking them and Hamilton getting marooned, so to speak?
I don't think any team will get marooned, Derek, to be honest with you. I don't think there's much between them all. I watched Hamilton on Saturday, and it's the same old story. Hamilton, they actually were a better team, probably. Tommy Wright even admitted that, but they just didn't take their chances. They never seemed to take their chances, and then St Johnstone scored 3 goals. St Johnstone are just a ruthless, experienced team, clinical when they need to be, and that's why they're up the top of the league. Hamilton, I feel sorry for Martin Cannon, because I think keeping Hamilton in the league is an achievement enough, but the fans don't seem to feel that way. They were giving them dogs abuse again on Saturday. The board were getting it on Saturday, and I get that Hamilton fans want to be ambitious and want to do better than just survive, but you look at the league, you look at the teams below, Hibs, Dundee United, Falkirk, Morton, try to get up, desperate to get up. For Hamilton to survive there is massive. But I agree with, I mean, the next two games, you would think it seems to be between Kilmarnock and Inverness and Hamilton.
Gareth, the Hamilton fans are talking about a boycott. I mean, how, if and when will we know if indeed they are boycotting games?
Oh, I see where you're going with that, Derek. Would you like to elaborate on that question?
I've been very disrespectful towards the Hamilton Accies fan base. Very loyal, diehard element of supporters. But being serious again, is this a defining week for Hamilton? Or is it too early to say that? Well, because of what David said, you know,
I think it's a defining week for Inverness and Hamilton. I know what David says about no team getting marooned, but the two of those teams are now 4 points adrift of Motherwell in 10th. Motherwell have played one game less, I think. So I think there might just be a little gap threatening to open up there. And whichever team loses this midweek, then they've got they might have an issue on their hands there.
Gareth Law, David Friel, thanks as always for your.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Stunning analysis. Bye now. Bye-bye.